south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, here's something we ought to mention, since we're coming up to that dreaded April 15 tax deadline. You know, Uncle Sam actually gives you a little breathing space if you're living or working overseas. Hard to imagine, but you get an automatic 2-month extension. You don't have to apply for it. So if you're an expat or a U.S. resident in a foreign country, you get till June 15th. That's your tax deadline. Thank Buddha for small favors, huh? Anyway, good to know. By the way, I just ran into another 15 most dangerous cities in the world list. Of course, it depends on who's doing the survey. But no matter, let's see how this particular list shapes up. Number 1, Caracas, Venezuela. Can see that. Was there not so long ago. Speaking of Venezuela, got an email from a longtime listener who is living in Venezuela. He's got a Venezuelan wife. You might remember I read an email of his a couple of years ago. That was slightly before Venezuela had the equivalent of martial law, you know? Anyway, he's toughing it out down there. He wants to leave in a big way. He could leave, of course. He's American. And he should be able to get his wife out, too. But he can't get the rest of his wife's family out. And that's kind of his goal. You know, they militarized the borders and slammed down on immigration. Isn't it odd? A third or you could call fourth world country like Venezuela who can't even feed their own people, but they could close their borders down good and tight. Yet the U.S. can't, or more like won't. But let's not get into that. Anyway, here's what Mike said in his email. I'll paraphrase and try to streamline it a bit. Here goes. Johnny, you know, of all the bad, rotten, horrible things going down here in Venezuela, there is one tiny little shining light at the end of the tunnel. He said, Johnny, when I look at old photos of me and my Venezuelan wife having fun, weekends, going to picnics, outings and such with friends and relatives, you know the drill. In fact, he says, right now I'm looking at a photo from 7 years ago and we're sitting down at a little restaurant at the top of the Teleférico. That's the gigantic ski lift that takes you from the city of Caracas all the way up to the top of the nearest mountain. All right, it's me again, Johnny. In fact, I've been on that thing. It's pretty wild. And you know, they've got a big sign when you pay your ticket and get on the thing. It says, made in Switzerland or Austria or some European first world country. Which I suppose was put there to reassure people that it wasn't made by Venezuelans. I hope they have a long-term Swiss maintenance contract. He said, notice the picture I sent you. Do you see any pattern there? Everyone, mothers, fathers, grandmas, kids, they're all smiling and have a good time, but they're all overweight. Well, nearly everyone anyway, except a couple of maintenance guys and the kid doing the shoe shine. And then he sent me a picture from the same spot just about from 2 weeks ago, he says, and everyone is extremely fit looking. However, none of them looks nearly so happy. So he said, Johnny, look, the whole country's on a calorie restriction diet, and if you know anything about that, or much about nutrition and dietary science, if you put rats on a severe calorie restriction diet, though they're not so happy about it, it's been proven they live 20% longer. And for the last couple of years, the whole Venezuelan population's been part of that experiment too. Oh, I take that back. The real rats of the country, the government and the military, are not part of that experiment. Then he says, in fact, Johnny, if you've been looking at any of the news reports and watching the crowds of people throwing rocks and smoke bombs and spitting at the cops, notice who the fat ones are, the cops and the military, not the protesters. So, Johnny, junk food sales are way down. It's back to rice and beans and the basics. I see it myself every day. When people are on the edge of starvation, they're awful irritable and pissed off, especially when they're used to being addicted to Coca-Cola, sugary stuff, and junk food. So there are some well-fed people here yet, the people working for government, and anyone who's got U.S. dollars, like yours truly. I know what you're thinking, Johnny. How can I get capital into the country and how can I have a nest egg when pretty much no one except big business can have a dollar bank account and there's almost no way for Americans to transfer dollars into the country? You know, before maybe a half a dozen years ago, Venezuela had a pretty good tourism economy, but now it's in the proverbial crapper. So, Johnny, I'll give you two guesses as to how first world people, Americans and such, who live down here, and there's not many of us anymore, are able to live a decent lifestyle. That is, get our dollars in and spend them somehow. Number one, we have debit and credit cards linked to a foreign bank. Foreign meaning outside of Venezuela. It could be Colombia, Brazil, Argentina, US, England. Doesn't matter. You can still buy certain things here, though most stuff's extremely expensive. Even so, the biggest markets now are the gray and the black market. While there's nothing on the shelves at the stores, if you ask around, there's always someone who can get you what you need or know someone who can. If you think about it, it's kind of like a prison economy. No one's got real money, but they've got a lot of cigarettes and things to barter. Yeah, in prison, if you know the right fixer, you can get anything, from handguns to hookers to Happy Meals. So yes, if you have outside currency, US dollars or Colombian pesos, whatever, you'll do all right, you'll survive. But the problem is, 95% of the people here don't have foreign bank credit cards or money outside the country to draw on. And even if you have one or two or 10 credit cards, don't think you're ever going to draw out dollars from the local ATMs here. And speaking of banks, of course, the government controls them completely. They could lock you out of your local bank account in a second, and they can shut down any of your above-board legal banking transactions, too. Now, suppose someone at your bank or any other government agency feels you're living above your means. They could say you're living a lifestyle that's above what your income should be able to support. Like, for example, they could lock your foreign credit card out of the ATM system, because all ATM and bank and wire transfers are cleared through Venezuela's central banking system. Which I could tell you is quite worrisome to any of us who has cash or income coming from an outside source. Which brings us to non-government financial transaction system number two. Bitcoin. Yeah. No person, business, or government can control that. That's why right now here in Venezuela, cash and Bitcoin are kings. And it's funny, a year or two ago, no one outside, maybe a few foreigners and English speakers, knew what Bitcoin was at all. And now it seems even shoeshine boys have heard of it. And of course, the government's taken steps to try to close down Bitcoin exchanges and put people in jail and such. So far, they've been able to nab only a couple of the high-profile guys. Typical move, figures, huh? But still, knowledge and use of Bitcoin grows week over week. So, Johnny, all I can say to all those people who said Bitcoin is a flash in the pan, not real money, hackable, whatever they want to say about it, they should come on down with a couple of Bitcoins in their wallet, get some boots on the ground, and see how Bitcoin's taken off and how people prefer it. Why? Because it holds its value. Sure, it's going up, and that's a plus, but in general, it holds its value. So, there are actually four mediums of exchange that work quite well here in Venezuela. Number one, US dollars. Number two, credit cards from outside banking institutions. Bitcoin and barter. Oh, and if you have Colombian or Argentine pesos, they'll work too, but not as good as they used to because guess what? People are counterfeiting them now. Well, they always did, but now it's out of control. Oh, and they're counterfeiting US dollars too. That's big business here. And the truth is, your average American like me couldn't tell a decent counterfeit of a $20 or $100 US bill if our lives depended on it. Imagine if you had a fistful of Colombian or Argentine pesos or even Brazilian reales. With all the counterfeiting, who's going to know? That's truly mission impossible. Which brings us back to credit cards, bitcoins, and barter, huh? And of course, real gold and silver coins and bullion would work too, but so few people have their hands on any of that stuff. Sure, they have jewelry, but that can only really be resold for scrap, which is going to be a quarter or less of what you paid for it. I can tell you there are a lot of pawn shops popping up. And ladies are turning in their family jewelry like crazy. They go into those pawn shops with a lot of hope and they walk out looking pretty sad. All right, it's me, Johnny, again. Now, just one more thing about the local funny money counterfeits. I've had a few. It's usually those little money changer guys at the borders that stick you with bad bills. They can see a clueless, non-Spanish-speaking gringo coming a mile away. Try to avoid those guys if at all possible. Or you could do what expat Eddie sometimes does when he gets a bad bill passed at one of his restaurants. He just passes it right back to one of those little money changer guys when he leaves the country. Gives them back some of their own medicine. Hell, they'd never expect a gringo passing bad bills. So is what's happening down here in Venezuela a preview to what's going to happen in the rest of the world, including the US? Well, if you take off the blinders, it's certainly looking that way, isn't it? Anyway, back to Mike. He says, Johnny, you know, when I finally get out of here with my wife and certain members of her family, if we have our choice, which we probably won't, we're not going to Colombia, Chile, Brazil, or Argentina. Way too expensive, you know. We'll be looking at Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador, and maybe Peru. As for me, I love the Altiplano and would love to move to Central America. That would probably mean Guatemala or Honduras. However, my wife and family are from Venezuela, and they just hate the thought of being too far from the homeland, you know? Even though the homeland is deep in the dumpster. But you know what they say, and I think I heard this on your show, Johnny. If mama's not happy, nobody's happy. Then Mike says, about a year and a half ago, I bought some Bitcoin at $250 each. Just a couple, and my wife said I was nuts. Of course, she would have rather invested in some shoes. Since then, I clandestinely accumulated a few more Bitcoins. I didn't tell her about those till around a few weeks ago when Bitcoin hit about $1,200 again. Now I'm the family hero and have to buy her some shoes, though I don't know where the hell she's going to wear them. You see, the nightlife scene has virtually collapsed due to rolling blackouts and escalation in crime. So are some things better left unsaid? Well, maybe, like if you do something really stupid, like buy Venezuelan real estate like I did. Ugh. But again, it was at the insistence of my better half. Because I'm sure, as you know well, Johnny, there is a Latin hierarchy of things Latin people just have to have, or they want to have on their way up, if they ever go up. Number one, as you've mentioned, a step up is not riding the chicken bus anymore. We don't have chicken buses here, but we have rickety public transportation. Same thing. Number two, in the case of women anyway, they want to have a boyfriend with a motorcycle or a car. And of course, a guy with a steady job. Number three, they don't want to rent. They want to have a house of their own, preferably not in the hood. Number four, and I don't think you've mentioned this on your show before, they all want to fly somewhere on a jet. Why not? When we were young, we all wished for that too. And the next thing on that list is kind of unfortunate. They want to visit the U.S., and if they make one stop and one stop only, it's going to be Disneyland. And the next on that list, they want to visit the homeland, Spain. And finally, for the middle class or poor but well-educated, they want to take a cruise. And on that list, a big Catholic church wedding, too. Oh, and babies. Don't forget the babies. And it's true, Johnny, 90% of Latins never get to tick off that list any farther than the motorcycle. In fact, I'd say about 80% of Venezuelans don't have their own car, even though gas is practically free. Last time I filled up, it was a massive amount of bolivars, but around $2 US. Forgive my ramblings here, Johnny, but I guess the takeaway message I'm trying to get across is, when you're sitting down with your friends and family and someone brings up Bitcoin, they start giving you heat about it, roll their eyes, and change the subject. Tell them it's underground mainstream here in Venezuela, and people down here who have just a few of them are finding out they're a kind of a lifesaver. All right, Mike, thanks for that boots on the ground report from Caracas. Speaking of lists, and I really digressed there, didn't I? Number two on the 15 most dangerous list. A list I'm never going to get through in this show if I don't stay on point, so I'll try. Anyway, number two is San Pedro Sula, Honduras. Yes, I've been there many times. And believe it or not, like every single big Latin American city, it has its real dumpy slums called asentamientos, that would be favelas, and some very, very nice areas with gated guarded communities, some nice malls and shopping areas, plenty of things to do, cool nightlife, and I'm talking cool because the place is dead hot and dusty all day long. Except during the rainy season, of course, but it's not a pretty town. It's got nearly a million people, but I'd never live there myself. Not because there aren't some nice places and great opportunities there for business and such, but it's just too damn hot. I'm an Altiplano guy, and for all you listeners out there who don't know what the Altiplano is, you have to get boots on the ground to see what it's like. The definition of Altiplano is around 4,000 to 8,000 feet above sea level, where you have everlasting spring. And I hear it all the time. They say, Johnny, before I started listening to your show, I didn't even know there was any such thing as an Altiplano. Well, neither did I. I was down here a couple of years before I figured it out myself. You know, every American up in the States has an impression of Latin America as being very hot. Now, that's great for a week or two Cancun-style vacation, or for people who absolutely love beach life. For many people up north, that seems like the perfect way to retire, until they get down here, buy or rent a condo or a house. Soon enough, you find out the only relief you really get is when you're in the water or inside with blasting air conditioning. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not the kind of person that likes to walk around with a perpetual ring around the armpit or experience the other slightly uncomfortable things that go along with being hot almost all the time. Don't get me wrong. If you're not that active and you don't move around too much, you just kind of like to lax and lay around, that's perfectly fine and a great lifestyle that seems to make a lot of people happy. Sometimes what you think is going to make you happy just doesn't work out that way at all. Fact is, I know plenty of people who own beach houses and they're sick and tired of going to them. It's a chore. They feel they have to because they've got the investment. Do you know anyone like that? Well, I was one of those too, and I got sick and tired myself. Aha, but then there's the Altiplano, which is a very small percentage of the landmass of Latin America. Now, I may have mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention it again. One of my very good expat friends, who's half Canadian, half U.S., owns three maquilas here in Latin America, and they're all in the Altiplano. Now, maquilas are factories, often clothing and textile factories, often called sweatshops by people up in the first world because that's the kind of news you hear about them. However, if you're in the Altiplano and it's always around 70 degrees or so, the sweat part of the sweatshop can be non-existent. And my gringo friend, who has these three maquilas, has owned and or managed maquilas all over the world, in Indonesia, Pakistan, Jamaica, Honduras, Nicaragua. You see, earlier in his life, he dealt with maquilas that were all at or near sea level. And probably 95% of the maquilas in the world are at sea level because they're close to ports for ease of shipping and receiving containers. Then, maybe 15 years ago, he discovered the Altiplano. Now, when I bring my expat insider seminar group to his factories, he always tells the story of how his workers are at least 20% more productive in the Altiplano than they are at sea level. Not to mention, he said, you get the added effect that people are much happier in the Altiplano. It's obvious, too, that they like their jobs because they're not overheated, sweating all the time, and therefore fatigued. So you'll see that for yourself if you come down to my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. Yep, registration's open now. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link for all information and details. And don't forget, we got a couple of special surprises coming at this next seminar, so do sign up. And don't forget to add 4 days to the front end or the back end of the seminar for one of those famous or both of those famous John Galt pre and post seminar trips. By the way, how's your plan B coming? What stage are you in? Well, if you can't get boots on the ground just yet, the very best way to get your ducks lined up is to take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to expatplanb.com. Do check out my 3 free introductory videos. So, I'll ask you one more time. How's your plan B coming along? You know, with the way things are deteriorating up north, who knows how long I can keep giving these seminars. I mean, really, there's no stanky swamp that needs draining more than Washington, D.C., but I'm afraid, and I'm sure you're starting to see this, there's just no fixing that broken mess. So what are those D.C. scumbags going to hit you with next? More currency controls? Travel restrictions? Yep. If you wait around long enough, you'll get that and much more. But I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about San Pedro Sula, Honduras as the second most dangerous city in the world. Then we have number 3, San Salvador, which is in El Salvador, just south of Guatemala, with its other borders, the Pacific Ocean, Honduras, and Nicaragua. So San Salvador, which is the capital, considered the third most dangerous city in the world, is a dangerous city. However, I know more than a handful of gringos who live there, and they live the life of Riley. It's cheap. They got beautiful gated, guarded subdivisions in that city. Again, you just have to know your zones. Every medium and large-sized Latin city is divided into zones, generally by geography, hills, valleys, rivers, and such, with some of those zones absolutely terrible, miserable poverty, and dangerous-looking, and other zones totally first world. And you know, years ago when I first got down here, there were those terrible zones and just tiny islands of prosperity in and around those zones. Now, practically all medium and large-sized Latin cities are expanding into the burbs. That's where all the big first-world developments are. Just like in the States so many years ago, the upper middle classes, the wealthy, and the rich are abandoning the congested inner cities for the burbs. So you're looking at a 20 or 30-year lag time on movement to the burbs. And it's true, in many of these places, if you didn't see that everything was in Spanish, you'd think you were in some comfortable burb in your own area. So would I live in or recommend San Salvador? Nope. For one, the layout's kind of crappy and it's not real pretty. But mainly because it's not in the Altiplano. I don't like to live life with a continuous coat of sweat on me. By the way, for most gringos and expats first coming down, that is newbie tenderfoots, I don't recommend living in any big or medium-sized Latin city. But living out in the burbs, well, that's just fine. We're talking 10, 15, 20, even 30 miles outside the city limits. To me, the medium and large-sized cities are just too congested with traffic, crazy, chaotic, polluted, just like living in any big congested city in the States. Which means you could be in a perfectly safe, excellent neighborhood, and only about 6 or 8 blocks away, there's a terrible slum. Well, when the feces hits the ventilator, you want to be a couple of chicken bus transfers away from the nearest crummy area. That goes for city living up in the States, too. Of course, they've got no chicken buses up there, but in that case, you don't want to be within a half a gas tank of any ghetto, do you? Now, the chicken bus rule applies here in Latin America because at least 80% of Latins don't have cars, so the half a gas tank rule doesn't apply. But you knew that already, right? Let's talk about the fourth most dangerous city on the list, Acapulco. You know I don't recommend Mexico. Unless, of course, you're going to live on the Yucatan Peninsula. That's way off the drug traffic trade. But still, I can give you 101 reasons why you don't want to live in that failed state. Speaking of Mexico, here's something that gringos and expats need to understand. Mexico, being that it's got a huge border with the U.S., has developed its own sort of Spanish-English mix, which makes for a very weird slang. And it's true, all 20 Latin countries have their own types of individual slangs, but Mexico is a world unto itself. Quick example, cojones. We've all heard that slang term for testicles used up in the States. Again, cojones. But you see, what most expats and gringos don't know, ones that have never been south of Mexico, is that cojones is not a commonly used term south of the Mexican border. So as soon as you hit Belize or Guatemala, they use a couple of different terms, one of the most common being huevos. Yes, you probably know that term too if you've ever had huevos rancheros in a Mexican restaurant or been to Taco Bell. Or perhaps you've had huevos divorciados, you know, divorced eggs. Two individual separate eggs on the plate, not scrambled. Makes sense in a funny kind of way, huh? As does the term for husband and wife, esposos, which is the exact same word they use in Spanish for handcuffs. Now, there's some Latin food for thought. So the point being, if you think you know some common Spanish slang from watching movies or from listening to the drywallers on the construction project next door, you'll find a lot of that slang just won't work south of the Mexican border. But where were we? Oh yeah. Number 5, Maturin, Venezuela. Well, we don't need to talk about that. Number 6, Tegucigalpa, Honduras. Yes, a dirty, ugly, chaotic, decaying city that's actually in the Altiplano. Nothing nice about it, except it does have some of those nice little areas of prosperity on the burbs, but still, nothing to write home about, so skip it. Number 7, we got Valencia. That's Venezuela checking in again. The whole country, not a fit place for man or beast. Number 8, Palmera, Colombia. And you know, as far as Colombia, they've got quite a few cities in the Altiplano, but I'm not the fan of Colombia that I used to be now that it's hit international living as the place to be. They're calling it the next Costa Rica, so gringos are piling in. Prices are being jacked up. The people are starting to get jaded. The real estate scam artists are coming out of the woodwork. Yep, it's a lot like Costa Rica was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. That's not to say you can't find some very nice places to live in Colombia. I mean, it's a huge country, and out in the boonies, man, it's fabulous. But the city as well, and the big brother government that's been ushered in. Take it from me, whatever you like about the place now, it's only going to take a couple of steps backwards in the next few years. Next, we have number 9 on our feces list. And this is our very first city that's not in Latin America. It's Ciudad del Cabo, South Africa. Place I'd never want to live. Number 10, Cali, Colombia. Well, you know, Cali has always had that reputation of being everyone's idea of the center of narcoland, right? All right, number 11 on our poop-stained city list, Ciudad Guayana. Also in Venezuela, no surprise there. Number 12, Brazil shows up with Fortaleza. Brazil also hits the mark with number 13, city called Natal. Number 14 also in Brazil, it's called Salvador. Isn't that funny? There are two cities named Salvador on this list, and Salvador, of course, means savior. Which brings to mind those famous biblical words, "Why hast thou forsaken me?" Talk about irony. Now, of course, you longtime listeners know I don't recommend Brazil at all, except for short and sweet beach vacations. Yep, I hear stories all the time about gringos at all-inclusive resorts who get robbed on the beach. Seems like all I get is negative emails from people with boots on the ground in Brazil. And as for the gringos who live in Brazil, it's usually because they've married a Brazilian lady. Now, of course, anytime you land in a sun and fun place, whether it's Costa Rica, Panama, Cancun, Cartagena, Rio, whatever, it seems like as soon as you get off the plane and you're hit with that blast of tropical air and you see those fantastic gardens and all those flowers, the birds of paradise, the bougainvillea, the hyacinth, all that mixed with those fresh jungle scents. Yes, most newbies are instantly transformed under the tropical influence. They grow an instant pair of rose-colored glasses and drop all the defenses that served them so well up in the States. And that's how so many seemingly intelligent gringos get sucked into countless bad real estate and business deals. The one mistake so many gringos and expats seem to make is that they trust the locals too much, local gringos too, and they jump in way too early. Anyway, speaking of Brazil, a place I don't recommend except for a nice vacation. You might remember that YouTube that was out a year or so ago where a guy in Brazil robbed a drugstore. He ran out into the street with his boodle, and a guy pulled up next to him, stole his stolen boodle, and left the guy just standing there, dumbfounded. Now, that used to be my all-time favorite Brazil robbery story. Yep, a new and better Brazil crime story has shoved it out of first place. You longtime listeners have heard me mention the fact that Mormons in pairs, that is, go to places throughout Latin America where angels fear to tread. Even so, you just don't hear stories about Mormons getting assaulted or hassled in any way. And however they may bother Latins with their message, Latins leave them alone. However, there has been a recent exception to that rule, and it's been in the news and on YouTube. So today I have this off the South American Wire Services. It says, a newly released dramatic video captures two would-be robbers in the streets of Brazil being undone by a Mormon missionary from the U.S. who disarms one man and pummels the other. In the end, the attackers ran, leaving behind their motorcycle, said Eric Hawkins, spokesperson for the church in the United States. One of our missionaries feared for his life and reacted. What can I say? A surveillance video shows a motorcycle carrying two men stopping near two of the church missionaries as they walked down the street in Manaus, Brazil. They were walking down the street wearing their distinctive white shirt and black tie when a man jumped off the motorcycle. He confronted the missionaries and brandished a gun. The larger missionary quickly disarmed the man, who then fled the scene. The second assailant tried to retrieve the gun, but the missionary threw it over the fence. That's when they began trading punches. Meanwhile, the other missionary, he would be the peaceful, turn-the-cheek, cowardly type, stayed out of the fray and moved quickly to the sidewalk. Then it says the assailant, outmatched by the jabs and kicks of the missionary, was also engaged by another man on the street, and the second would-be robber also ran away. You gotta love it. Then, the article goes on to say, the Mormon Church has more than 74,000 missionaries, serving in 418 missions around the world. So, maybe they're training Mormons in self-defense. Maybe they should. Doesn't matter. I want to meet that guy and buy him a tequila. But really, that incident puts an additional black mark on Brazil, since Mormons have always been considered untouchable. Now, it turns out it happened a couple of months ago, but you can still see the video on YouTube. All right, we're at number 15 on the 15 most dangerous cities list, and the U.S. finally scores at number 15 with St. Louis, Missouri. Kind of thought it'd be Detroit or Chicago. Better luck next time.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.